So in Mahayana Buddhism, the ultimate wisdom is emptiness. But in Theravada Buddhism and insight meditation, they have three levels of wisdom, three parts of wisdom that you can experience in your meditation practice. They are impermanence, suffering, and not self. And emptiness is just an extension of not self. So let's talk about impermanence. Everything is always changing. And Holly and I were talking today, and the great thing about live presentations is it only happens once. And during this very long presentation, a lot of things have happened and changed. Hopefully, your thinking in some ways. And maybe your criticism. What's he really saying? What does he really mean? I don't think he's saying the right thing or doing the right thing. Or he's so wonderful, I can hardly wait to hear him again. All these things are just going on moment by moment. And then it ends. And then something else happens. And we get into the car, or we go to the store, or we turn on the TV, or we go in the backyard. Or we have. So it always happens once, and it never happens again in the same way. And everything's changing in a constant state of flux. And if that's the case, the wisdom of understanding impermanence is don't get attached. And don't have aversion. You don't have to worry about it changing. It will. And don't worry about it staying the same because it won't. So this idea of impermanence allows us not to be attached and not to have aversion. It allows us to be free. Number two, the wisdom of understanding the world is ultimately unsatisfactory. Everything in the world is ultimately unsatisfactory. Everything. Not always. We can't see the unsatisfactoriness oftentimes in the beginning, but because of impermanence, and if you're attached to the way it is, it will become for you ultimately unsatisfactory. So, what do you do? How do you deal with ultimate unsatisfactoriness? Well, you might just sort of rant and rave and say, you know, how else could it be? What was I expecting? I'm no fool. Of course it's unsatisfactory. The whole world has always been unsatisfactory because this is where life and death occur. This is where impermanence lives. It's never been a good place to live, and yet we find ourselves here for 50, 60, 70 years dealing with the unsatisfactoriness of our life. Bummer. But the Buddha said, well, don't get too bummed out because I can tell you how to deal with it in a way that will end your suffering and you will be at peace. You will be in the present moment with a rare amount of acceptance of just the way things are. So don't be surprised when things go bad. That's the way it's supposed to be. Be surprised when things go good. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And finally, this thing about self, emptiness. This was the most difficult part of this wisdom triangle that it forced me to go read and sit and understand and assimilate and ruminate like a cow chewing his cud. Just what the hell does that mean? Because I knew I existed, and I knew I existed in a certain way, and the reference point was the little voice inside my head, even though the exterior was changing, the little voice changes really slowly and is always assuring me or warning me, my best friend. So the Buddha said, well, at a relative level, absolutely, you have a little friend inside you. That's yourself and your personality and ego, and it's really necessary. That's what makes us separate from the Neanderthal, if you will. And in the book Sapiens, it said the ego started maybe around 70,000 years ago. And before that, there was nothing at all remarkable about being human. We were just one of the animals out there, and we were being hunted. We weren't even at the head of the food chain. You know, we were someplace in the middle. You know, you're walking along and all of a sudden a panther would show up and you go, oh, man, you know. And then you're food or you're free, one of the two. So we got this ego 70,000 years ago, which allowed us to decipher the world around us in a very personal way, to make us separate from the world. We were no longer part of it, which was the beginning of our suffering because we never felt complete or whole. but it allowed us to transform rivers into oceans, and we made bridges, and we made giant communities, and we have thousands of people living together, and we have millions of people living together, because we all have our egos, and we can be manipulated rather easily to think about something as being real that never existed. Which I thought, wow, really? It like never existed? And for 12 years, I was at UCLA. I was a volunteer chaplain. We had a Buddhist club. I was on the spiritual care committee. And so one day I tested it out. I tested this concept out. I said, okay, where does the real UCLA exist? Where's the essence? And I went around and asked people. I said, where is the real UCLA? And they said, right here, man. You're just standing in it. No, I want, where's the essence? Where's the soul? Is it in a building? Is it behind a door? Can I find it? And everybody looked at me and they said, you know, no, I don't think there's anything like that here. It's just UCLA. I go, wow, okay. So I started to look at myself. Where do I exist? Is there like a little soul, a personality? Is it behind the pituitary gland? Where does the real me live? And there wasn't any real me to find. It was just this process that happened because I had a mind and body, and at 70,000 years later, I have an education, and I have concepts that have no relationship to the world around me at all, but I make it happen anyway. Wow. So emptiness turns out to be nothing exists in the way we think it does, that there are just mental constructs. A chair with a back and legs and a seat is a mental construct, and the word chair has nothing at all to do with the object that we're talking about. We are in conspiracy with each other to say the word chair means that thing over there. And so we can find the chair if somebody says, show me the chair in the room. But it's an illusion, it's a big dream, and that's our reality. So emptiness seems to be the true nature, that nothing exists independently apart from everything else. That's the wisdom of emptiness. Nothing exists independently apart from anything else. So that chair is dependent on certain things for its existence. In the same way a chariot at the time of the Buddha had wheels and a yoke and a platform, and all those things together created a chariot. But if you take things apart, then you have a chariot, you have a wheel, and you have a yoke, but there's not a chariot. So you take the chair apart and you have a back and a seat and legs, but it's no longer a chair. It's the potential of a chair. And if you start to take yourself apart, you find that you no longer exist either in the way you thought you did. You have potential to exist in a certain way. Wow. So I'm just thinking about this stuff, and I'm applying it to the world around me. And I started to see that looking at it in that way allowed me to have a little more freedom and not perceive things in such a serious way that everybody gets really uptight about some kind of definition of something. And you're looking at it and going, but it's not real, man. It doesn't exist that way. Why all this anxiety? Remember the 19... Well, you don't. But in 1963, we had a missile crisis. Some remember. We had a missile crisis, you know? And it was amazing, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we had John F. Kennedy. And Russia was sending the ships with the big missiles to Cuba. And it was just a matter of time until they were all set up and World War III would happen. Now, I'm listening to the radio. I am like 14 years old. And I'm listening to the radio and hearing the commentator talk about all this kind of stuff. And the thing I noticed the most was the fact that adults were afraid. And I really hadn't seen a group of adults that afraid before, because of the concepts they had in their mind about the end of the world. That literally, in a couple days, we might see the end of the world as we know it. And so we had the president and his group of men, and they decided this is what we're going to do, and they had faith, and they had confidence, and they had a lot of hope that it would work out. And thankfully, it did. And then everybody, there was a collective sigh of relief. Ah. And we continued to the next crisis. But I'm listening to the radio, I'm hearing words, and those words are creating concepts in my head, and I can picture the missiles, and I can picture Cuba, even though I had never been to Cuba and didn't know what kind of missiles they were, but I had basic concepts that were filling in because of the words, and I'm going, wow, this is really a trip. And now we have, you know, the healthcare issue, and we're going to have the tax thing, and we have all these people, and they're... We have the right people, and we have the wrong people, and we have the people with red hats and the white hats, and we have, you know, who's right, who's wrong. We have all these concepts. We have to pick sides. But do we have to pick sides? Do we have to pick sides? I think if a Buddhist was going to pick a side, they would say, okay, what side is going to cause the least amount of suffering? What's going to cause the least amount of suffering? Is healthcare a good thing? Does it reduce suffering? Or do more people suffer because they have health care? And the Buddhist might say, well, you know, it's nice not to have to die if you get sick. Maybe there's less suffering if we have health care. So maybe it's a good thing to do. And it's going to cost money. And you go, wow, why does it cost so much money? And I thought to myself, why am I paying insurance on my car? I am forced by the state to have insurance in case I get into an accident. And because I live down the street, my zip code is crazy. If I was living in Simi Valley, I would be spending half of what I'm spending now. It's not fair, but I have to do it. And I can drive with confidence that if I get into an accident and don't die, my car will be fixed by the insurance I'm coming. Of course, I'll be spending like $500 or $1,000 deductible, but it'll be fixed. So sometimes the concepts and the fear that's created is just one big illusion. And if we sit quietly in the morning and sit quietly in the evening and let those fears arise, exist, and pass away, we come to this place in the present moment where there is acceptance of the way things are. And if we can change them, if we can make a difference, we can do that. If we can't change them, if we can't make a difference, we can do that by accepting it. And then the idea with these three aspects of wisdom in the paramitas is to know the difference between what we can do and can't do and just relax into the process. Okay, so the paramitas are useful and applicable to our everyday life. It's not just a philosophical concept. It's a way of practicing your life until your life turns into your performance.